Good evening, dear listener, and welcome to another enchanting episode of Drift Off, where dreams and stories blend into a perfect bedtime lullaby. If you're enjoying the show, please consider subscribing to help keep the podcast ad-free. You'll find all those details and links in the show notes. Tonight I will be reading several chapters from the book, Little House on the Prairie. This story is about a little girl named Laura Ingalls and her family who leave behind their little house in the big woods of Wisconsin and are now heading to Kansas. The story captures the essence of pioneer life through the eyes of a young Laura. She provides vivid descriptions of the challenges and joys of frontier living, with detailed accounts of hunting trips, encounters with Native Americans, and the hardships they face as early settlers. This book has captured the hearts of both young and old, making it a cherished classic. And so, as always, my friend, take a nice deep breath and let it out slowly. Feel all the tension in your body just melt away. You're all cozy and safe in your bed. So it's time to relax and let go now. Start by softening your forehead and smoothing out your brow. Relax your eyes and unclench your jaw. Let your whole face be smooth and relaxed. Now imagine your shoulders dropping down and easing back, and just let them go, and feel the relaxation and heaviness flow down through your arms, down through your hands, and all the way into your fingers. Let them be loose and limp. Feel your chest and belly become soft. Let your back melt down into your bed. And allow that relaxation to flow down into your hips, into your legs, into your feet, and all the way down into your toes. Every muscle in your legs feel heavy, loose, and limp. And as our story begins, your body and mind will keep on relaxing. Just listen to my words and allow your imagination to take you away, and everything will begin to slow down. Even your breathing and thoughts will slow down as you listen. It's all preparing you for a peaceful sleep. My friend, there's nothing else you need to do right now, and nowhere else you need to be. So just lay back, relax, and enjoy the story. Chapter 19, Mr. Edwards Meets Santa Claus. The days were short and cold. The wind whistled sharply, but there was no snow. Cold rains were falling. Day after day the rain fell, pattering on the roof and pouring from the eaves. Mary and Laura stayed close by the fire, sewing their 9-patch quilt blocks or cutting paper dolls from scraps of wrapping paper and hearing the wet sound of the rain. Every night was so cold that they expected to see snow next morning, but in the morning they saw only sad, wet grass. They pressed their noses against the squares of glass in the windows that Pa had made, and they were glad they could see out, but they wished they could see snow. Laura was anxious because Christmas was near, and Santa Claus and his reindeer could not travel without snow. Mary was afraid that, even if it snowed, Santa Claus could not find them, so far away in Indian Territory. When they asked Ma about this, she said she didn't know. "What day is it?" they asked her anxiously. "How many more days till Christmas?" And they counted off the days on their fingers, till there was only one more day left. Rain was still falling that morning. There was not one crack in the gray sky. They felt almost sure there would be no Christmas. Still, they kept hoping. Just before noon, the light changed. The clouds broke and drifted apart, shining white in a clear blue sky. The sun shone, birds sang, and thousands of drops of water sparkled on the grasses. But when Ma opened the door to let in the fresh cold air, they heard the creek roaring. They had not thought about the creek. Now they knew they would have no Christmas because Santa Claus could not cross that roaring creek. Pa came in, bringing a big fat turkey. If it weighed less than 20 pounds, he said, he'd eat it, feathers and all. He asked Laura, "How's that for Christmas dinner? Think you can manage one of those drumsticks?" She said yes, she could. Then Mary asked him if the creek was going down, and he said it was still rising. Ma said it was too bad. She hated to think of Mr. Edwards eating his bachelor cooking all alone on Christmas Day. Mr. Edwards had been asked to eat Christmas dinner with them, but Pa shook his head and said a man would risk his neck trying to cross that creek now. "No," he said, "that current's too strong. We'll just have to make up our minds that Edwards won't be here tomorrow." Of course, that meant that Santa Claus could not come either. Laura and Mary tried not to mind too much. They watched Ma dress the wild turkey, and it was a very fat turkey. They were lucky little girls to have a good house to live in and a warm fire to sit by and such a turkey for their Christmas dinner. Ma said so, and it was true. Ma said it was too bad that Santa Claus couldn't come this year, but they were such good girls that he hadn't forgot them. He would surely come next year. Still, they were not happy. After supper that night, they washed their hands and faces, buttoned their red flannel nightgowns, tied their nightcap strings, and soberly said their prayers. They lay down in bed and pulled the covers up. It did not seem at all like Christmas time. Pa and Ma sat silent by the fire. After a while, Ma asked why Pa didn't play the fiddle, and he said, "I don't seem to have the heart to, Caroline." After a longer while, Ma suddenly stood up. "I'm going to hang up your stockings, girls," she said. maybe something will happen. Laura's heart jumped, but then she thought again of the creek, and she knew nothing could happen. Ma took one of Mary's clean stockings and one of Laura's, and she hung them from the mantel shelf on either side of the fireplace. Laura and Mary watched her over the edge of their bed covers. "Now go to sleep," Ma said, kissing them goodnight. "Morning will come quicker if you're asleep." She sat down again by the fire, and Laura almost went to sleep. She woke up a little when she heard Pa say, "You've only made it worse, Caroline." And she thought she heard Ma say, "No, Charles, there's the white sugar." But perhaps she was dreaming. Then she heard Jack growl savagely. The door latch rattled, and someone said, "Ingles, Ingles." Pa was stirring up the fire, and when he opened the door, Laura saw that it was morning. The outdoors was gray. "Great fishhooks, Edwards. Come in, man. What's happened?" Pa exclaimed. Laura saw the stockings limply dangling, and she scrooged her shut eyes into the pillow. She heard Pa piling wood on the fire, and she heard Mr. Edwards say he had carried his clothes on his head when he swam the creek. His teeth rattled and his voice shivered. He would be all right, he said, as soon as he got warm. "It was too big a risk, Edwards," Pa said. "We're glad you're here, but that was too big a risk for Christmas dinner." "Your little ones had to have a Christmas," Mr. Edwards replied. "No creek could stop me after I fetched them their gifts from Independence." Laura sat up in bed. "Did you see Santa Claus?" she shouted. "I sure did," Mr. Edwards said. "Where? When? What did he look like? What did he say? Did he really give you something for us?" Mary and Laura cried. Wait a minute," Mr. Edwards laughed. "And Ma said she would put the presents in the stockings, as Santa Claus intended. She said they mustn't look." Mr. Edwards came and sat on the floor by their bed, and he answered every question they asked him. They honestly tried not to look at Ma, and they didn't quite see what she was doing. When he saw the creek rising, Mr. Edwards said, he had known that Santa Claus could not get across it. "But you crossed it," Laura said. "Yes," Mr. Edwards replied, "but Santa Claus is too old and fat. He couldn't make it, where a long, lean razorback like me could do so." And Mr. Edwards reasoned that if Santa Claus couldn't cross the creek, likely he would come no farther south than Independence. Why should he come 40 miles across the prairie, only to be turned back? Of course he wouldn't do that. So Mr. Edwards had walked to Independence. "In the rain?" Mary asked. Mr. Edwards said he wore his rubber coat. And there, coming down the street in Independence, he had met Santa Claus. "In the daytime?" Laura asked. She hadn't thought that anyone could see Santa Claus in the daytime. "No," Mr. Edwards said. "It was night, but lights shone out across the street from the saloons." "Well, the first thing Santa Claus said was, 'Hello, Edwards.'" "Did he know you?" Mary asked. And Laura asked, "How did you know he was really Santa Claus?" Mr. Edwards said that Santa Claus knew everybody, and he had recognized Santa at once by his whiskers. Santa Claus had the longest, thickest, whitest set of whiskers west of Mississippi. So Santa Claus said, "Hello, Edwards. Last time I saw you, you were sleeping on a corn shuck bed in Tennessee." And Mr. Edwards well remembered the little pair of red yarn mittens that Santa Claus had left for him that time. Then Santa Claus said, "I understand you're living now along the Verdigris River. Have you ever met up down yonder with two little young girls named Mary and Laura?" I surely am acquainted with them, Mr. Edwards replied. It rests heavy on my mind, said Santa Claus. They are both of them sweet, pretty, good little girls, and I know they are expecting me. I surely do hate to disappoint two good little girls like them. Yet, with the water up the way it is, I can't ever make it across that creek. I can figure no way whatsoever to get to their cabin this year. Edwards, Santa Claus said, would you do me the favor to fetch them their gifts this one time? I'll do that, and with pleasure, Mr. Edwards told him. Then Santa Claus and Mr. Edwards stepped across the street to the hitching posts, where the pack mule was tied. Didn't he have his reindeer? Laura asked. You know he couldn't, Mary said. There isn't any snow. Exactly, said Mr. Edwards. Santa Claus traveled with a pack mule in the southwest. And Santa Claus uncinched the pack and looked through it, and he took out the presents for Mary and Laura. Oh, what are they? Laura cried. But Mary asked, then what did he do? Then he shook hands with Mr. Edwards, and he swung up on his fine bay horse. Santa Claus rode well for a man of his weight and build, and he tucked his long white whiskers under his bandana. So long, Edwards, he said, and he rode away on the Fort Dodge trail, leading his pack mule and whistling. Laura and Mary were silent an instant, thinking of that. Then Ma said, you may look now, girls. Something was shining bright in the top of Laura's stocking. She squealed and jumped out of bed. So did Mary. But Laura beat her to the fireplace, and the shining thing was a glittering new tin cup. Mary had one exactly like it. These new tin cups were their very own. Now they each had a cup to drink out of. Laura jumped up and down and shouted and laughed, but Mary stood still and looked with shining eyes at her own tin cup. Then they plunged their hands into the stockings again, and they pulled out two long, long sticks of candy. It was the peppermint candy, striped red and white. They looked and looked at that beautiful candy, and Laura licked her stick, just one lick. But Mary was not so greedy. She didn't even take one lick of her stick. Those stockings weren't empty yet. Mary and Laura pulled out two small packages. They unwrapped them, and each found a little heart-shaped cake. Over their delicate brown tops was sprinkled white sugar. The sparkling grains lay like tiny drifts of snow. The cakes were too pretty to eat. Mary and Laura just looked at them. But at last, Laura turned hers over, and she nibbled a tiny nibble from underneath where it wouldn't show. And the inside of that little cake was white. It had been made of pure white flour and sweetened with white sugar. Laura and Mary never would have looked in their stockings again. The cups and the cakes and the candy were almost too much. They were too happy to speak. But Ma asked if they were sure the stockings were empty. Then they put their arms down inside them to make sure. And in the very toe of each stocking was a shining, bright new penny. They had never even thought of such a thing as having a penny. Think of having a whole penny for your very own. Think of having a cup and a cake and a stick of candy and a penny. There never had been such a Christmas. Now, of course, right away, Laura and Mary should have thanked Mr. Edwards for bringing those lovely presents all the way from Independence. But they had forgotten all about Mr. Edwards. They had even forgotten Santa Claus. In a minute, they would have remembered, but before they did, Ma said gently, aren't you going to thank Mr. Edwards? Oh, thank you, Mr. Edwards, thank you, they said, and they meant it with all their hearts. Pa shook Mr. Edwards' hand, too, and shook it again. Pa and Ma and Mr. Edwards acted as if they were almost crying. Laura didn't know why, so she gazed again at her beautiful presents. She looked up again when Ma gasped, and Mr. Edwards was taking sweet potatoes out of his pockets. He said they had helped to balance the package on his head when he swam across the creek. He thought Pa and Ma might like them with the Christmas turkey. There were 9 sweet potatoes. Mr. Edwards had brought them all the way from town, too. It was just too much. Pa said so. "It's too much, Edwards," he said. "They could never thank him enough." Mary and Laura were too much excited to eat breakfast. They drank the milk from their shining new cups, but they could not swallow the rabbit stew and the cornmeal mush. "Don't make them," Charles Ma said. "It will soon be dinner time." For Christmas dinner, there was the tender, juicy roasted turkey. There were the sweet potatoes baked in the ashes and carefully wiped so they could eat the good skins too. There was a loaf of salt rising bread made from the last of the white flour. And after all that, there were stewed dried blackberries and little cakes. But these little cakes were made with brown sugar, and they did not have white sugar sprinkled over their tops. Then Pa and Ma and Mr. Edwards sat by the fire and talked about Christmas times back in Tennessee and up north in the big woods. But Mary and Laura looked at their beautiful cakes and played with their pennies and drank water out of their new cups. And little by little, they licked and sucked their sticks of candy till each stick was sharp pointed on one end. That was a happy Christmas. Chapter 20, A Scream in the Night. The days were short and gray now. The nights were very dark and cold. Clouds hung low above the little house and spread low and far over the bleak prairie. Rain fell, and sometimes snow was driven on the wind. Hard little bits of snow whirled in the air and scurried over the humped backs of miserable grasses, and next day the snow was gone. Every day Pa went hunting and trapping. In the cozy, firelit house, Mary and Laura helped Ma with the work. Then they sewed quilt patches. They played patty cake with Carrie, and they played hide the thimble. With a piece of string in their fingers, they played cat's cradle, and they played bean porridge hot. Facing each other, they clapped their hands together and against each other's hands, keeping time while they said, "Bean porridge hot, bean porridge cold, bean porridge in the pot 9 days old. Some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot 9 days old. I like it hot, I like it cold, I like it in the pot 9 days old." That was true. No supper was so good as the thick bean porridge, flavored with a small bit of salt pork that Ma dipped onto the tin plates when Pa had come home cold and tired from his hunting. Laura liked it hot, and she liked it cold, and it was always good as long as it lasted. But it never really lasted 9 days. They ate it up before that. All the time, the wind blew, shrieking, howling, wailing, screaming, and mournfully sobbing. They were used to hearing the wind. All day they heard it, and at night in their sleep, they knew it was blowing. But one night, they heard such a terrible scream that they all woke up. Pa jumped out of bed, and Ma said, "Charles, what was that?" "It's a woman screaming," Pa said. He was dressing as fast as he could. Sounded like it came from Scott's. "Oh, what can be wrong?" Ma exclaimed. Pa was putting on his boots. He put his foot in, and he put his fingers through the strap ears at the top of the long boot leg. Then he gave a mighty pull, and he stamped hard on the floor, and that boot was on. "Maybe Scott is sick," he said, pulling on the other boot. "You don't suppose?" Ma asked low. "No," said Pa. "I keep telling you they won't make any trouble. They're perfectly quiet and peaceful down in those camps among the bluffs." Laura began to climb out of bed, but Ma said, "Lie down and be still, Laura." So she lay down. Pa put on his warm, bright plaid coat and his fur cap and his muffler. He lighted the candle in the lantern, took his gun, and hurried outdoors. Before he shut the door behind him, Laura saw the night outside. It was black dark. Not one star was shining. Laura had never seen such solid darkness. "Ma," she said.
"What, Laura?"
"What makes it so dark?"
"It's going to storm," Ma answered.
She pulled the latch string in and put a stick of wood on the fire. Then she went back to bed. "Go to sleep, Mary and Laura," she said. But Ma did not go to sleep, and neither did Mary and Laura. They lay wide awake and listened. They could not hear anything but the wind. Mary put her head under the quilt and whispered to Laura, "I wish Pa'd come back." Laura nodded her head on the pillow, but she couldn't say anything. She seemed to see Pa striding along the top of the bluff, on the path that went toward Mr. Scott's house. Tiny bright spots of candlelight darted here and there from the holes cut in the tin lantern. The little flickering light seemed to be lost in the black dark. After a long time, Laura whispered, "It must be morning," and Mary nodded. All that time they had been lying and listening to the wind, and Pa had not come back. Then, high above the shrieking of the wind, they heard again that terrible scream. It seemed quite close to the house. Laura screamed too, and leaped out of bed. Mary ducked under the covers. Ma got up and began to dress in a hurry. She put another stick of wood on the fire and told Laura to go back to bed. But Laura begged so hard that Ma said she could stay up. "Wrap yourself in the shawl," Ma said. They stood by the fire and listened. They couldn't hear anything but the wind, and they could not do anything, but at least they were not lying down in bed. Suddenly, fists pounded on the door and Pa shouted, "Let me in, quick, Caroline." Ma opened the door and Pa slammed it quickly behind him. He was out of breath. He pushed back his cap and said, "Ooh, I'm scared yet."
"What is it, Charles?" said Ma.
"A panther," Pa said. He had hurried as fast as he could go to Mrs. Scott's. When he got there, the house was dark and everything was quiet. Pa went all around the house, listening and looking with the lantern. He could not find a sign of anything wrong, so he felt like a fool to think he had got up and dressed in the middle of the night and walked 2 miles, all because he heard the wind howl. He did not want Mr. and Mrs. Scott to know about it, so he did not wake them up. He came home as fast as he could because the wind was bitter cold, and he was hurrying along the path where it went on the edge of the bluff when all of a sudden he heard that scream right under his feet. "I tell you, my hair stood up till it lifted my cap," he told Laura. "I lit out for home like a scared rabbit."
"Where was that panther, Pa?" she asked.
"In a treetop," said Pa. "In the top of that big cottonwood that grows against the bluff there."
"Pa, did it come after you?" Laura asked. and he said, "I don't know, Laura." "Well, you're safe now, Charles," said Ma. "Yes, and I'm glad of it. This is too dark a night to be out with panthers," Pa said. "Now, Laura, where's my boot jack?" Laura brought it to him. The boot jack was a thin oat slab with a notch in one end and a cleat across the middle of it. Laura laid it on the floor with the cleat down, and the cleat lifted up the notched end. Then Pa stood on it with one foot. He put the other foot into the notch, and the notch held the boot by the heel while Pa pulled his foot out. Then he pulled off his other boot the same way. The boots clung tightly, but they had to come off. Laura watched him do this, and then she asked, "Would a panther carry off a little girl, Pa?" "Yes," said Pa, "and kill her and eat her too. You and Mary must stay in the house till I shoot that panther. As soon as daylight comes, I will take my gun and go after him." All the next day, Pa hunted that panther, and he hunted the next day and the next day. He found the panther's tracks, and he found the hide and bones of an antelope that the panther had eaten, but he did not find the panther anywhere. The panther went swiftly through treetops where it left no tracks. Pa said he would not stop till he killed the panther. He said, "We can't have panthers running around in a country where there are little girls." But he did not kill that panther, and he did stop hunting it. One day in the woods, he met an Indian. They stood in the wet, cold woods and looked at each other, and they could not talk because they did not know each other's words. But the Indian pointed to the panther's tracks, and he made motions with his gun to show Pa that he had killed that panther. He pointed to the treetops and to the ground to show that he had shot it out of a tree, and he motioned to the sky and west and east to say that he had killed it the day before. So that was all right. The panther was dead. Laura asked if a panther would carry off a little papoose and kill and eat her too, and Pa said yes. Probably that was why the Indian had killed the panther. Sweet dreams, my friend. Sleep well.